The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And yes, this is episode 434 of the Columbia Calling podcast. This week's very special guest is Ole Rider Bergum. He is the outgoing forests and climate expert at the Royal Norwegian Embassy here in Colombia. So he's been at the forefront of all the efforts to help quell deforestation in Colombia. So he'll talk to us as one of his last, I would imagine, interviews in his role here in Colombia before he heads off to a new portfolio there in Africa. So a great pleasure to have him on the show. Yes, we're back. We're back from the UK. It was a month and a half over there, and now we're back to the grind here in Colombia. And it's good to be back, although it was very good to visit back the motherland after 3.5 years without visiting. Well, obvious reasons for that one. The Columbia Calling podcast, as you know, is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. And this episode is brought to you by BNB Colombia Tours, experts in custom-made travel throughout Colombia. The team at BNB Colombia Tours can provide you with fantastic private experiences, creating wonderful memories of Colombia for a lifetime. Check out the website at bnbcolombia.com, complete the free itinerary form, and tell them that Columbia Calling sent you to receive a further 5% off their already great prices. So yes, some great offers there from our sponsors, Columbia Calling. That's Latin News and BNB Columbia Tours. So please look at them. And of course, help us out at Columbia Calling. You can sign up at patreon.com, patreon.com / Columbia Calling, and throw a couple of dollars a month at us and help us become more economically viable and sustainable here anyway. And you're helping out myself, and not only myself, but also Emily Hart. Thank you so much for listening, and bye-bye for now. And we're back. This is episode 434 of the Columbia Calling podcast. I'm Richard McCall. This will be the last episode here from London. I'll be back next week in Colombia, back in Bogota, where I think it's raining a lot. But yes, episode 434, my very special guest is Ole Rider Bergum. Those of you who read the press about Colombia will know his name. It will be very familiar. He's the Councillor for Climate and Forests at the Royal Norwegian Embassy in Bogota, and very, well, so much work going on. So welcome on the Columbia Calling podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you. And I believe congratulations are in order because you have a new posting. Sadly, you'll be leaving Colombia, but you're off to Uganda.
Yes, wow. In a week's time.
In a week's time. So, and if you go to Uganda, does that mean you deal with other countries in the region as well?
That is correct. I will also deal with some of the other countries in the regions, among them Rwanda, Burundi.
Yeah. Oh, so, Rwanda. So Rwanda, where they're going to give the rights in the national forests for drilling.
There are a number of issues that we can deal with at a later stage.
I guess you have to be very, very diplomatic at this moment in time. I have read, is what I will say, I have read that there are plans to allow and to permit licenses for drilling and exploration in, is it the Bawindi Impenetrable Forest around there? But I can't remember.
Yes, that's true. And there's also an issue... in the Virunga National Park in DRC. There are a number of issues being discussed these days regarding extraction of oil, in particular from protected areas in Africa.
You go from one complex situation to another complex situation, and I admire you for that, because this is definitely a hot topic. Of course it is. Now, for how long have you been here in Colombia then, working on this topic?
I've been in Colombia for 4 years.
Okay.
And eight months.
So tell us a little bit about it, because your name pops up a lot because you're doing plenty of projects all around the country. Now, and I want to put things into context. If we were to read about, if we were to read from the independent media, the independent press about Colombia, we would think, or we'd know, that there's deforestation, it's massive, it's strafing the country. But if we were to read only what President Duque says, he seems to have stopped all deforestation, and Colombia is... it's almost like Pangloss. It's the best of all possible worlds. Can you give us a more balanced or a more, I don't know. Let's just get an accurate overview of what's happening in Colombia when it comes to deforestation.
Well, if I can give you an accurate or a precise analysis of the situation, perhaps I'm not the right one to do that, but I can give you some of my views on the situation. We've been working in Colombia on these issues and on other issues in particular, the implementation of the peace accord, for a number of years now, facilitating different processes and in recent years also becoming one of the most important donors. Mm-hmm. In 2021, we were the second biggest donor, overall after the US. Mm-hmm. So it was US, us, and then other donors. I'm not then talking about only environmental funds, but also peace and reconciliation funds, human rights, etc. Mm-hmm. So we are engaged in a number of different areas, also geographic regions of Colombia. I'm responsible for the forest and climate portfolio. So we focus our work in the Amazon, but that does not mean that we don't have activities in other parts of the country, such as the Pacific region. Mm-hmm. But our focus is still on the Amazon. Mm-hmm. As you say, the situation is complicated. It's still complicated, unfortunately. Many reasons for that. We had a reduction in deforestation some years back. Since then, it's gone up and down. Unfortunately, the last figures that was just released, the official figures, told us that we had a slight increase in 2021 in deforestation, which, of course, was a disappointment. We hoped that we could see a small reduction in deforestation in 2021. Unfortunately, that did not happen. Mm-hmm. Many reasons for that. You can't only blame the government. You can't only blame illegal actors in the regions where you find most of the intact forest. It's also depends on the region. In some regions, you see the land grabbing is one of the main reasons behind reforestation. Mm-hmm. Then you, cattle ranching, and in other regions, it's illegal mining. So it's to generalize, it's difficult in such a big and complex country as Colombia. But the fact still remains that we have an increase in deforestation still. Mm-hmm. And we have a deforestation that in 2021 reached 174,000 hectares, which is almost the same as equivalent to the extension of Bogota, right? Mm-hmm. So you're losing a Bogota of forest extension every year. That is, of course, very unfortunate and deeply disappointing, I suppose, for all parties, the government as well. I think efforts have been done by this government to try to halt deforestation and the loss of natural forest. But the approach that has been chosen so far has not produced expected results from the government point of view. We have an agreement with the government, together with the UK and Germany. It's called a so-called Joint Declaration of Intent. Mm-hmm. It was signed in 2019. A first Declaration of Intent was signed in 2015 to halt the loss of natural forests and stimulate sustainable development mm-hmm. in the forested areas of Colombia. That has been it's not the government policy. It's a state policy. It's become a state policy to continue this work of reducing deforestation. We started with the Santos government, now we continued with the Duque government, and we look forward to work with the Petro's government. So, but of course, each government has their approach. We might agree or disagree with some of the lines of work or priorities of each government. And I think we have voiced in different fora, in different formats, our agreement or disagreement with the decisions that have been made. Mm-hmm. But of course, we have, and according to this declaration of intent, we were supposed to reach 155,000 hectares this year when it comes to the deforestation rate. That will not happen, which is unfortunate, because this is, you know, we have a payment for result mechanism going on. So the second modality of that payment for result framework is payment for reduced deforestation at the national level. Mm-hmm. So if we don't see a sustained reduction in deforestation, we won't be able to make major payments either. So the next milestone is in 2025, when the government has... according to the 2019 agreement, the government of Colombia will do its utmost to reach 100,000 hectares. Hmm. Still, reaching 100,000 hectares isn't a great victory, because it's still a huge swath of land, mm-hmm. as enormous extensions of forest that is being lost every year. But you have to be a realist in this business. If you can't expect the country to reach zero deforestation in a very short period of time, the next milestone is 2030, when the country has committed to reach zero deforestation. That's according to an international agreement that was signed, the New York Declaration. Back in 2012, I think, when not only Colombia, but also other countries committed to this very ambitious goal. We are in Colombia and in other partner countries. We're not here for the short haul. We're here for years. Mm-hmm. So, and we are very aware that this is high-risk business, mm-hmm. Especially the kind of modality we have chosen, which is payment for results, mm-hmm. When we only pay when we have concrete results. So we have patience, but of course it makes us impatient to see that deforestation is increasing. And we point that also out in our discussions with the government in a frank and open manner. And they are very well of the consequences of unfortunately not reaching the goals that have been set. And we will, of course, work very closely with the new government to see if we manage to reach the other milestones and other goals in the Joint Declaration of Intent so that we can trigger these payments and contribute to reduce deforestation and thereby reduced emissions from deforestation in Colombia.
As I have to ask, so 2021 or 2022 was the milestone. 2022, we had to get the Colombian government had to get it down to 155,000 hectares. That's the deforestation, but it was at 174,000 hectares. So this does not trigger the payment. This payment that you say is like payment for results. It comes from Norway, I suppose. Is it Norway, the UK, Germany, and where does the money go? Like if Colombia had been successful and got the figure down to 155,000 hectares, how do you distribute this money?
Well, we have agreed on channeling these funds into specific mechanisms that are designed to make investments in mainly in the territories. I'm talking about the territories, we're talking about the areas most heavily affected by deforestation. The mechanism that I'm personally most happy with is the Amazon Vision, which is operating in the Amazon, as the name can signal, and which special and focus on the arc of deforestation in the Amazon. That is to say that you make investments in those areas where you see most of the deforestation. And try to stop and reverse what is happening. So we have two main mechanisms that have been agreed with the government. Now we have a new government coming in. They might decide to invest the money that they rightfully have earned because of their own efforts or the efforts of previous governments and decide to distribute the resources in a different manner. But I have to add that in addition, we do fund quite substantial activities of the civil society, which is the other big leg. It's not visibilized in the Joint Declaration of Intent, but it's just as important, and I often say it's even more important than some of these big mechanisms, because through the civil society we can reach communities and regions where the government and the government entities have limited access due to the security situation or local factors that impede the government agencies to operate in a fully satisfactory manner.
And back to this thing though, but because the government didn't make the figure, they don't get the payment.
Exactly.
So this government didn't get this payment. I guess we're starting again from August the 9th, the 7th, when Petro gets in, and he's aiming for 2025 for the next payment.
According to the current agreement we have, the Joint Declaration of Intent, which has which lasts until 2025.
Okay.
So it goes across the electoral borders. Mm-hmm. The government borders. It's going well into his presidency.
Yeah.
We have agreed in this agreement, if we can call it that, what they are going to be paid for and when. We don't only pay for reduced deforestation. We also pay for what we call the milestones, political milestones, or implementation milestones, which could, for example, be number of hectares that are restored. So that's detailed in our agreement. So this is open information. Everybody can just go to our website, then you can find both the joint declaration of intent and annexes and the implementation reports of the government. So this is open to the public. But of course, as you say, the disbursements will not be halted completely, because this government has also managed to implement measures and taken steps to fulfill parts of the agreement when I'm talking about the political milestones and the implementation milestones. Where the big money is related to reduced deforestation. So of the $310 million that we promised under the joint declaration, 260 of those are linked to reduced deforestation. So if we don't have a reduction in deforestation, sustained reduction over several years, those 260 million will unfortunately not be dispersed. And there are also other similar mechanisms that might also be affected because of this situation, which is not linked to our agreement, but to other frameworks that are also result-based. So we're talking about more than $260 million that might not be dispersed if we don't manage to see a reverse trend in the years to come.
It's a significant amount of money, and especially for projects of this type. And when the money is disbursed into, let's say, you work, the Amazon, do you have a say in what kind of projects, sort of sustainable projects or socially based projects? Does the mission of intent have a say? Is that I think we should be supporting these, or it's a Colombian government decision at the end?
Well, when it comes to the Amazon vision and also the other main mechanism, we do have an ability to discuss and have a say when it comes to how the money is being spent. But again, this is funding that the government has kind of earned because of their own efforts. So we won't have unreasonable views on what it should be spent on. We voice our views and we discuss it with the government, and we reach a conclusion with that's never been a problem, really. But what is more important for us than our views is what the people in the regions think about how the money are being spent. So that is what is important for us, in particular the indigenous communities. So this is something that we always focus on. Not that much what we believe is the right or a wrong thing to do, but more what the communities feel that is the right or wrong thing to do. So that is of crucial importance for us.
I think
try not to be too difficult.
No, it's important, and actually, this is something that we've seen more from. Well, it gives more hope, I suspect, from the incoming government and their desire to include traditional indigenous communities and Afro-Colombian communities in the debates around their own, the historic territories there. So this is. That it's already been done, but sort of behind the scenes, is a very positive thing altogether. Well, I think we should sort of roll back. I got so caught up in the money side of things. Of course, because it is fascinating. I didn't know about this, and I didn't know. But I mean, I read a report last year or the year before by Crisis Group. Bram Abus did the piece on the sort of main causes for deforestation, and the top one that came in was cattle farming, and then the others were kind of mixed up after that: illegal mining, illegal timber forestry, and so on and so forth. What have you found in your time? Would you say that it's that the main thing is sort of the dispossession of lands and displacement of communities for then cattle farming? Is that the major problem that we have?
I read the report of Bram, which is an incredible journalist and a researcher. I really admire his work very much. Very brave, very brave guy as well. And I really found it fascinating to see how quickly he understood the dynamics. Mm. But of course, he is very well versed and familiar with how the illegal crime or the organized crime organizations operate in Colombia, and that's what we're talking about here in Colombia. Much, if not most, of what is happening in the field of deforestation is linked directly or indirectly to either armed groups or organized criminal networks, networks that even operate across the borders, and that have a capacity to move money and resources not only inside Colombia, but also across borders and also to other parts of the world. Mm-hmm. So these, we're talking about very, in many cases, not in all cases, but in many cases, very advanced criminal networks that are behind the large-scale deforestation. Mm-hmm. Then you have these different drivers that you mentioned. And yeah, again, it's we're talking about schemes that are mainly geared towards land grabbing, mm-hmm. controlling land, long-term perspective, controlling huge swaths of land for economic and strategic purposes. And then you have the nexus between the crime, the illegal networks that are operating some of these schemes or that are behind the deforestation in many parts of the country, and legal activities. Business people, politicians, people working in some of the government authority or agencies that are linked to what is happening, and in some cases benefit greatly from their links with these illegal actors. So, and then of course you have small scale deforestation as well, linked mm-hmm. to farmers mm-hmm. moving deeper and deeper into the forest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have that phenomenon as well. You have deforestation linked to building of roads, mm-hmm. infrastructure, mm-hmm. which is significant, mm-hmm. because these roads open up new areas to large-scale deforestation. You can see that in many parts of the arc of deforestation, even inside the Chiribiquete, mm-hmm. you see illegal roads sort of being built and maintained. Mm-hmm. So it's a complex material. Again, I would recommend people to read Brad's report, because mm-hmm. I think it gives a very good insight into some of the problems as we also see them, and I very much agree with his analysis. It's what we are seeing is very much linked to the state's inability to control territories, and the unfortunate trend towards losing territorial control in parts of the country. So you can't work with deforestation or sustainable development in these regions without taking that very important fact into consideration. It's very difficult to do sustainable development or work on sustainable development in regions where you have no effective state control, but the public authorities are even absent in many cases, and where the armed forces are the only visible state presence. So I think I always emphasize the importance of having the full presence of the state, not only the armed forces, but people living in these regions need to feel that they are citizens, that they have the same benefits and rights and privileges as people living in Bogota, Cali, Pereira, Cartagena, whatever. And feel that somebody is there for them, and the state is there for them. Because now they might be very interested in moving into legal businesses, and in most cases, people do not want to engage in illegal activities. But if you have an illegal armed group running around in your neighborhood, and you have no state helping you to stay away from these people because they are harassing you and forcing you to into illegal business, you don't really have much choice, do you? So I think that is a huge problem, and if that will be as it was for the Duque government, as it was for the Santos government, it will be a huge challenge to secure territorial control and state presence in these regions. If we don't see that, we won't see a sustained reduction in deforestation either. And the sustainability of what we are doing is also very low if we are not able to move around freely, and if people are harassed or really obeying an illegal actor instead of focusing on creating a sustainable and legal future in the regions where they live. So I think that is something you always have to keep in mind when working on development in Colombia. Very difficult to do that on a long term basis, on a sustainable basis, when you have these regions that are not controlled by the state.
Yeah, I mean, everything you're saying is 100%. I mean, I agree with 100%, and it's very much in line, of course, with items written up in the peace agreement, of which, of course, Norway is a guarantor of this. Wasn't it Dag? I forget his name.
Dag Nyland.
There you go. Must be a friend of yours. But it's very much in line with this, and I believe in it immensely. And of course, point one, you know, agrarian reform, which brings in the whole idea as well of territorial protection and security, and you know, where the smallholder farmer doesn't have to push further into the forest in order to produce. And I mean, this is when people say to you, you know, what is the core problem? Well, there are many problems in Colombia, but I always come back to point one, the agrarian reform, and so much of that is there. And you went over so much in that last segment that we were talking. There's almost too much to discuss, but we went from the vast side of the illegal mining, illegal forestry, illegal land grabs, coca cultivations. You didn't mention it, but it's there, and all of this land grabs for cattle farming. And then on the other side, you sort of went into that gray area where it then moved into, well, people who are connected to the government, politicians, or then sort of legal businesses, but making it, you know, without a state presence, all of this will continue without any sort of transparency in the regions. All of this will continue, and I've been to Chiribiquete, but up from the south, I've been in Guaviare, Meta, other places in Caquetá, in the Amazon, and sometimes you want to shake your head because you can see it from the aeroplane, you know, when you're flying into places like this, or if you're going upriver. And I do believe that projects such as yours, such as the Norwegian embassy and government, they they are doing good, but it's a it's an immense battle to fight in a country so big. That's the other thing. Colombia is so big and geographically impenetrable in so many places that sometimes you're just like, oh, I don't know where to start. But I guess we just have to say, you know, keep on going, keep on doing it, because something has to be done. Has there ever been a moment in your last 4 years and 8 months in Colombia where you've just sort of wanted to throw up your hands and say, God, I don't know. I don't know if this is worth it. I doubt there has been a moment, but just tell me, has there been any moment that has left you despairing?
Yeah, I think there have been several moments.
Okay.
Absolutely. You know, the worst moments, if we should talk about the worst moments I've had, is are the moments when we have lost friends.
Yes.
People that have been killed. I've been in that situation for six times since I came to Colombia. Six people that I know are close contacts, partners that have been killed because of the activities they have been doing in the regions related to environmental activities and promotion of indigenous rights. Mm. So when those things happen, you know, you feel that this is really, you know, this has no future. But then you think about what these people fought for, and you think from your commodity and your living in your nice bubble in Bogota. Of course, I move around in the regions as well, but I don't live there. Mm. I'm not there on a permanent basis. These people live there, they fight there, and they even in these cases died for what they believed in. And then you think, no, this fight has to go on, and it's very important the role that we are playing from the donor side, that in order to support those that are really in the front line when it comes to fighting for territorial rights and destruction of forests and natural resources. So I think those are the moments when I've really felt down, and when I've kind of thought through everything and wondered if this is really worthwhile. Mm. But then you think about these individuals and their individual struggles, and you kind of you understand, and this is something you just have to continue fighting for from where I am. Mm. And then you have the moments, I think it was when during Santos government, we had an overflight that must have been early 2018, if I'm not wrong. And I remember from one flying over the over some parts of the arc of deforestation, I could at one point see 8 forest fires from where we were flying. Big forest fires, 8 from the helicopter, and then you see, can you understand the magnitude of the situation? And then you kind of also wonder if this is really possible to deal with a situation which is so so uncontrollable. Mm-hmm. So that's perhaps that was one of my first old flights of the arc of deforestation, and just seeing the size of the problem and the complexities that you know, it's really kind of sets you back completely. Yeah, but then again, you kind of breathe deep, take a deep breath, and again try to focus on the reasons why we are here and the long term perspective. Mm-hmm. And again, back to what I said initially, this is not something that can be solved tomorrow. But it's not easy to to kind of say that when you're there in a helicopter or when you're in the field and you in fact see a forest fire. how brutal it is.
Thank you for sharing that with us, because I mean, to have lost, to know of six people, close contacts, friends, colleagues, who have been murdered in the regions for environmental reasons, it cannot be easy to recover from, really. I mean, this is something that will stay with you forever, obviously, forever. And also to being on one of those flights and seeing eight forest fires. I think you could talk for hours. Unfortunately, I don't want to keep you for hours, because I know. But I want to ask, let's move on a little bit and just say, how do you feel? Do you feel positive for the next government and their efforts, their desires? Very much on an environmental message. Duque obviously had an environmental message as well, but this one with Francia Márquez as vice president, and it seems like hopefully that it's, you know, they're keen to roll up their sleeves and get properly involved. But how do you feel from an expert's perspective?
Oh, of course, we are very hopeful that we can engage in a very constructive manner with the new government. Seeing the implementation of the peace process in connection with the implementation of the schemes that we have in place in the field of climate and environment, forests. So I think we will have a number of meetings in the months ahead to adjust our cooperation to the new priorities that this government comes in with. I really think we will be able to achieve important things in the years ahead, and hopefully reach the goals that we have set forth in the Joint Declaration. If we adjust the Joint Declaration to the new priorities, that is, of course, something we will discuss with the new government and how to spend the money, how to work with the government also politically to achieve these goals. These are all things that we will sit down and discuss in the weeks and months ahead. But I always try to be an optimist. This is a very difficult country. I love Colombia. Came to Colombia first time in 1996, and since then, and I've kept in touch with this country and its people, and it's easy to. I'm an optimist. I think that in place to achieve a good dynamic with this new government. We've already had some initial contacts with some of the future government officials, and things look promising. And we've had a good cooperation with the current government as well. In spite of the fact that we sometimes don't agree, we've had fruitful and good discussions with them as well. I'm absolutely confident that will continue and hopefully improve in the years that come.
Spoken like a true diplomat. You're very carefully worded, but very positive in the end. And I'm sure we all have our whichever government we worked with, there would be disagreements and agreements. I mean, I think that's par for the course. Okay, well, we'll sign off with one last thing, and I guess you're going to have to be careful on it. What was your opinion on Sir Zach Goldsmith coming over and doing his his fly over Chiribiketi and throwing some seeds out of the helicopter with Ivan Duque, President Duque. Was it during COVID? It was during COVID, the heady months. What it was like? It felt like a publicity stunt more than anything.
Well, you have to ask Zach Goldsmith. I wouldn't dare to comment on the government's priorities and cooperations with this government. So, we work closely with the UK.
I know, you have to be careful.
I wouldn't comment on that. But it's now we have a new government soon coming into office, and I think we will all, including the UK, will have a good working relationship with a new government coming.
I think so too. Well, listen, let me say thank you so much for your time, and thank you so much for this your last week in Colombia, sparing some time to give us kind of like, it feels like you gave us a nice conclusion to your stay, to your period here. And I know that my listeners will appreciate the candor with which you spoke, and we'll be all wishing you just the very best in Uganda. It'll be interesting as well.
No, thank you very much. Thanks for this nice conversation. We've been trying to do this for some time, so I'm glad that we finally.
I'm in London, you're in Barranquilla. It's been fun. I've been talking to Ole Reidar Bergum from Norway. He's the Councillor for Climate Change and Forests for the Royal Norwegian Embassy in Bogota. But shortly, he'll be in Uganda. But keep an eye out, because he's always in the press giving excellent commentary on what's going on, and of course speaks like a true diplomat that he is. So thank you again. We'll go over now and have some messages from our sponsors, and of course be sure to tune in next week. But thank you everyone for listening. Bye-bye.
This episode was brought to you by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean. Since 1967, their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. And also, our other sponsor is BNB Colombia Tours, experts in custom-made travel throughout Colombia. The team at BNB Colombia Tours can provide you with fantastic private experiences, creating wonderful memories of Colombia for a lifetime. Check out the website at bnbcolombia.com, complete the free itinerary form, and tell them that Colombia Calling sent you to receive a further 5% off their already great prices. So that's bnbcolombia.com and, of course, latinnews.com. Thank you for everyone for listening. That's us. Farewell. And, of course, check back next week. Bye-bye.